The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, this is Donovan Carroll on the show Millennial Musings, probably through the Flypod. I talk a lot about the things wrong with the world, but I'd like to talk a little bit about the spiritual and religious side of things and what we can do in this world and what we are called to do in this world. I'm just going to jump right in. I know it's been a while, so let's get to it. I came across a quote the other day when I was reading a book. The book was The Glory of the Crusades. You can find it on Catholic Answers. It's a great book. But the quote was, "We should finally stop being like the frightened rabbit that stares at the snake before it is swallowed by it. This defeatist attitude, this whining self-pity that has gained so much ground in Catholic circles, is an insult to God. What is needed is a new forceful consciousness of being Catholic." And that quote doesn't just apply to Catholics, that quote applies to Christians. This whining self-pity, I think, is referring to this idea that Catholics and Christians are afraid to talk to people about our faith, and we're afraid to live our faith in public. Could you imagine if all the Christians in the United States actually voted and acted according to their faith? College campuses would become a lot more of a moral place. A lot more businesses like Google would actually acknowledge Easter. I think I remember Google did not actually have a doodle for Easter. Like, you know, if you go on Google, there's like a doodle every day for someone. They didn't have one for Easter, and I couldn't believe that, because so many Americans are Christians. But I wanted to kind of challenge myself and challenge everyone listening to kind of live with that forceful consciousness of being a Christian. So 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 says, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts. Always be ready to give an explanation for anyone who asks you for a reason for your hope." Again, that's 1 Peter 3:15. And I think that's calling us to know our faith and be ready to defend it and be ready to share the love and the wisdom and the truth with the world. I know Bishop Robert Barron from California, he's either in Los Angeles or Sacramento Diocese. He talks about how first we show people what is beautiful, and then we show people what is good, and then we can show people what is true. Because if someone comes learning about the faith and you immediately start talking about the early church fathers or St. Thomas Aquinas, it can be confusing. It can be overwhelming. When you start dropping passages from the catechism or start throwing scripture, it can be overwhelming. So sometimes I even just, you know, look up pictures of Gothic cathedrals or something. PragerU has a really cool video called How Dark Were the Dark Ages, and it talks about just how big and bombastic and impressive the beauty of the Middle Ages was. And that's something I wish we could bring back, because a lot of these contemporary churches aren't beautiful. They don't make you want to inquire more. They're just kind of contemporary, I guess. And what is good? I always read the story of the saints. And oftentimes you find in these stories of saints, and not even necessarily of saints, but just of good people, you find within them examples for your own life. For example, I was reading a book called Church of Spies. It's a new book about Pope Pius XII's secret war against Hitler. In the prologue, it talks about Mr. Josef Mueller. He's a Vatican intelligence agent, and he was being interrogated by an SS officer. He was beaten and beaten to the point where he was unrecognizable, and they kept trying to get him to sell out Pope Pius XII for Pope Pius XII's role in attempting to assassinate Hitler. So it's a really good book. Look this stuff up if you don't know, because it's super interesting how Vatican City played a role in World War II. Josef Mueller, he had a family, he had kids, you know, he had a wife, but he wouldn't give it up. He wouldn't give up the Pope, and they kept torturing him and beating him, and finally they said to heck with it, and they dragged him out, and no one's really sure what happened to him next. But typically what the SS would do, they'd either beat you to a pulp to the point where you just beg for death, or they would hang you up by your wrists, and then hang heavy barrels from your ankles, and just let the insides of your body just be torn. And that story pertains to the whole what is good, beautiful, and true, because that story embodies all three of them. I think it's beautiful that this man was willing to lay down his life for the war effort and for a cause that he believed was worth dying for, and for a cause that he believed for his wife and kids. And I think it's good because, you know, the World War II is often seen as a battle of good versus evil. That's why it's so appealing, I think, to students of history, myself included. And what he did was good because he was trying to protect people who worked in the assassination attempt on Hitler. And it's true because we see within it the power that conviction and virtue can have. But I think we've lost a bit of that in this day. You know, I read a story about a university to combat rape culture was teaching young men that they should just masturbate and watch pornography, because that would help combat rape culture. And that really bothered me, because not only is pornography super evil, honestly, in my opinion, it's one of the biggest problems of our time. It fuels the sex traffic industry. 70% of women involved in sex trafficking were forced to make porn. We need, a new conviction, a new renaissance, so to speak. The founding statement of Harvard in the 1600s was, "Let every student be plainly instructed and earnestly pressed to consider well, the main end of his life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life, and therefore to lay Christ in the bottom as the only foundation of all sound knowledge and learning, and seeing the Lord only giveth wisdom. Let everyone seriously set himself by prayer in secret to seek it to him." The first time I read that, I almost got goosebumps, because that was so beautiful. It acknowledges the fact that Christ is the source of all truth. And actually, the Latin phrase on the coat of arms for Harvard was Veritas Christo et Ecclesiae, which is truth for Christ in the church. It's since been just shortened to Veritas, unfortunately. But truth for Christ in the church, that's powerful, because, again, back to the Josef Mueller story, he was willing to die for the truth that Hitler was a bad man, that the war effort was a good thing. He had that a forceful consciousness of being Catholic, something that we all need, something that I'm striving to have. So a way we can find this forceful consciousness of being Catholic, maybe you don't have a lot of time to read, maybe it's a pain to read about the stories of the saints, or read Church of Spies, or read The Glory of the Crusades, or watch PragerU videos, but perhaps you can find it within your family. I know for me, my brother, my father, and my mother have all taught me a lot. My father wakes up early, works out in the freezing cold, works out in the hot sun, and he doesn't stop. He keeps going. He's got the hardest work ethic I've ever seen. His drive to provide for me and my brother and my mom, it's incredible. I know he's in a lot of pain because his job's physically demanding, but he keeps going. And he's an example for me, how I can keep going and how I can pursue the things worth pursuing with a work ethic that's hopefully unmatched and unapologetic. And my mother, she's the most nurturing, loving person I've ever met. I see it in my nephew. When I was a kid, my dad told me stories. If I so much as breathed or coughed funny, she would wake up to come check on me. And I think it's with that unapologetic love that we should love God. And my father teaches it to me too. The unapologetic work ethic and the constant drive to provide is something that we can apply to our faith lives and our relationship, not just with our family, but more importantly with our relationship with God. And how to nurture. My mother taught me how to love and to be loved. I think we can obviously channel that deep love we have for our family into the love of God. Maybe you're familiar with the pyramid analogy. You need to put God first in your relationships, because you're both climbing the pyramid, and as you get in, God's at the top, and as you get closer to God, you naturally get closer to each other. And my brother, you know, he's a single father. I don't know if I've ever talked about that, but he's a single father. Sometimes he only gets 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night repeatedly because of the erratic sleep patterns of a small child. But every day, like clockwork, my brother wakes up at 4:30, puts in a 10-hour shift, and never complains about not having any sleep. So, you know, that's an example of how can we sacrifice in our lives and be not complaining about it for God. You know, all those three stories, I think, are ways that we can use the virtues and the lessons we learn from family. And maybe it's not family, maybe it's just a good friend. We can learn how to love God better, and therefore perhaps stop being a minimalist to try to strive for something more than mediocrity, because this society encourages mediocrity. You know, on the third floor of the media building on my campus, there is full frontal, totally nude women pasted on the walls for their art project. And, you know, I'm a little confused about how that's art, but whatever. And if you're a young man and you walk past that, of course you're going to have, you know, thoughts that are less than virtuous, to say the least. These college campuses, the society we live in, it doesn't challenge us to be better. It rewards our mediocrity. It rewards our inability to do our best, right? I mean, it just confuses me. We have such a participation trophy attitude in our society. We don't strive to avoid the things that are evil or to pursue the things that are good. Looking back at some of the early figures of the Catholic Church, when St. Francis of Assisi was tempted with lust, because, you know, they're human, when he was tempted with lust, he would roll around in the snow. And when St. Benedict, the founder of the Benedictine monks and one of the founders of monastic life, was tempted with lust, he would throw himself into a thorn bush. When St. Bernard was tempted, he would plunge into an icy pond. These men knew that society was unrewarding and would eat you up if it got the chance. So they went the extra mile to avoid mediocrity and to avoid being taken down by it. And they even had less distractions and less ways to sin back then than we do, because it's thrown in our face nowadays. So again, what we need is a new forceful consciousness of being a Christian, what it means to be a Christian in this day and age, where being a Christian is absolutely countercultural, which is super interesting because Christians are seen as being a majority, but a lot of Christians just don't act with a forceful consciousness. And that's what we need to start doing if we want to fix the problems in the world. No, I'm not saying you quit your day jobs and become monks and all that sort of thing. That would be hyperbolic. But what I'm saying is just in your day-to-day life, what can you do to be better and not be rewarded for sinful behavior within our society? So I wanted to touch on the sort of religious and spiritual aspect of things. I might do that some more later down the line. I know I talk about doom and gloom a lot of current events. I talk about the things that are wrong with this world, but I wanted to try to talk about some things that were right with the world, and that's our opportunity to claim our identity as Christians and make the world a better place. So thanks for listening, and tweet me at DonovanCarrollMM or email me at DonovanCarrollMM@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.